shot through the air into Yoon's waiting hands. "The pigment in the paint," Yoon explained. "It's usually made of ground-up rocks."
"No!"
Dairin screamed, his fears coming to light in a way he could never have imagined.
"No! No! No!"
The guards behind him froze, stricken with horror at what they were witnessing. This was an assault on something deeper than their own lives. As if bolstered by his celebration, mighty Avatar Sito resisted the longest. But he, too, fell, the paint of his hat running down his long face, merging with the dark colors of his shoulders, then his waist, then his knees. His great stone stamp flaked away into cinnabar dust, joining the growing mass of pigment hovering under Yoon's control. One side of the gallery was now completely blank. Instead of the wise faces of their avatars, the portraits of the Fire Lords stared at an empty wall. Yoon held the finest work of the Fire Nation in a defiled, roiling blob above his head. And then, like a gleeful child permitted to break a jar, he hurled it on the floor. The pigment exploded in a storm of hardened pellets and sharp fragments and blinding mist. Kiyoshi managed to shield her eyes before flying shards embedded themselves in her forearms. A chunk of paint hit her so hard in the midsection that it knocked her on her back and snapped a patch of links in her chainmail, metal pouring out of her like spilled guts. Her windless gasps did nothing but coat her mouth with red dust. By the time the blurriness in her vision cleared and the vapors from the paint explosion subsided, Yoon was gone. Aftermath. The voices around her merged into a whirlpool of indistinguishable noise. Kiyoshi crawled her way toward the moans of the wounded on the other side of the room, dragging trails through the dark powder coating the floor. The palace guards had been wearing armor, but mainly ceremonial pieces. She saw lacerated faces, the telltale clutching of broken ribs. And those were the lucky ones, like her. Some of them weren't moving at all. Chancellor Dairin had been completely unprotected. She found his body peppered with tiny holes, each one welling with blood. She tried to staunch his wounds with her hands, but couldn't cover them all. She had no water to even attempt healing him. More guards poured in from every side, shouting in confusion. Yoon must have already escaped their encirclement. Kiyoshi heard more than a few wails of anguish from the hardened fighters at the damage to their culture and history. "Out of the way," she heard Atuat bella. "Give me space." The water tribe doctor slid to her knees beside Kiyoshi. Instead of pulling out water from the skin at her hip, she prodded the fallen guards around Kiyoshi with her bare hands, examining each one in turn for only the briefest of moments before moving on to the next. "Why aren't you helping them?" Kiyoshi yelled, her hands still pressed to Dairin's torso. "There's too many wounded. I have to triage who can be saved and who can't." "The Chancellor is dying." Atuat took one look at Dairin. "He's already gone," she said with such dismissive neutrality it made Kiyoshi think she was staring at Tieguai the assassin himself. "Don't waste your time on him." Kiyoshi had read the woman completely wrong. She'd assumed the great doctor would fight for every breath of every victim. Atuat's friendship with Heidon had made it seem like feeling emotions for those you healed was the key to their health. But here, she was clinically prioritizing, deciding fates quicker than she'd chosen what to drink at the party. Kiyoshi took her hands off Dairin's motionless body, his robes sticking to her palms from the blood. She didn't know what blessings Fire Nationals gave to the dead. She hoped her whispered apology to the poor man would do. Atuat unslung her water skin and tossed it at her. "If you know any healing, do what you can. For the living." The doctor placed her hands over the chest of the unconscious guard she was examining. The air around them went cold, cold enough that Kyoshi's flesh prickled. "What are you doing?" Kyoshi asked, fighting off a shiver. "Lowering his temperature." Atuat's temples pulsed in concentration. "It slows every process of the body down, including death. But if I don't stop at the exact right time, his fluids will turn to ice and destroy his own organs from the inside out." After a few chilling sweeps of her hands, she shifted over to the next guard and began the process anew. "I've never heard of such a technique," Kyoshi said. Freezing liquids into solids was a basic skill of waterbending. Even she could do it by now. But she'd never considered the subtleties that lay in between water and ice, nor the blurring lines between the elements inside and outside of a person's body. "That's because it requires too much raw power for most benders, and not damaging anyone with such power takes too much control. Misuse the technique, apply force in the slightest excess, and it kills. So perhaps you should shut up and let me focus." Kyoshi took the water from the skin and worked on who she could. She mostly knew how to stop bleeding and pop joints back into their sockets, and there was call enough in the room for her simple skills. As she healed the superficial injuries and glanced at the ruined fire avatar wall, a single thought pounded through her head. It wasn't Yun who did this. It couldn't be. If she wasn't sure before, the heartlessness toward Rongi and Heidan, the wanton vandalism, the offhanded slaughter of Lu and Chancellor Dairen made her certain now. This was the work of the spirit. The foul, glowing apparition who'd identified her as the Avatar and dragged Yun into the darkness of a mountain had seized his mind. No one could go through that kind of experience unchanged. The Yun she knew would never be so cruel and destructive. Atuat finished chilling the last of the victims she deemed savable. She swatted the leg of a nearby guard. "Take them to the hospital ward, but be careful," she commanded. "They're not actually healed yet, but your surgeons can start working on them now. I'll be there to help soon." Kyoshi only had one question for the woman. "Can you teach me this technique? Saving lives, pulling people back from the brink of death?" There was no worthier use of bending in her opinion. Just the ability to keep someone stable until a real doctor arrived could have made such a difference in her past. Atuat snorted in derision. At first, Kyoshi thought she might have accidentally belittled how much study it took. But it turned out Atuat viewed it from a different angle. "When it comes to healing, I can teach anyone anything in a fraction of the time it normally takes," she said. "Whether I have a student of the right qualities is a different matter." They got to their feet, only to see the leader of Zoryu's personal security detail waiting for the Avatar. The armored man's face roiled with bottled silent anger, as if he'd been handpicked to represent the outrage of an entire nation. Only his duty kept him from bursting at the seams. "We can talk about it later," Atuat muttered to Kyoshi. "I think you have more pressing matters at the moment." Kyoshi followed the guard captain through the palace. They passed a torrent of furious nobles heading in the opposite direction, a crowd that had been recently dismissed from an unsatisfactory meeting. The courtiers, who had taken so much care in their order of speech during the party, muttered and hissed to themselves about never having been so humiliated, and a child being a disgrace to the crown. Some of the most livid men and women wore the winged peony, which meant they were Kyoso, the same clan as Zoryu's mother. The captain stopped at a set of massive bronze doors and indicated he wasn't allowed to go any farther. "Where are my companions?" Kyoshi asked. "The lieutenant and the headmistress." She had a feeling she'd need the guidance of Fire Nationals for what came next.
"Coordinating the palace lockdown," came the gruff reply.
"Being useful, unlike you," was the additional silent commentary.
Kiyoshi pushed the doors open herself, revealing the throne room, the same place where the Fire Lord received his war council. The ceiling of the great hall was supported by four towering red pillars with dragons of painted gold spiraling around them to the heavens. In the back, up a series of steps, lay the throne of the Fire Nation, a flat, blocky platform that would have given the sitter little comfort. A giant sculpted dragon, weaving through the coils of its own body, hung over it, threatening to burst from the wall. She guessed that if she peeked under the red silk carpet that covered the entire middle third of the floor, she might find yet more dragons staring back. A straggling minister sidestepped his way past her, the last remnant of an audience she'd missed. It was the man she'd nearly struck with her fan. He glared at Kiyoshi and stormed out, leaving her in the throne room with only two other people, the Fire Lord and his brother. It was not a good moment for a stranger to walk in on. Zoryu was ashen and stooped, his eyes half shut as if the light were causing him pain. Jaijin stood tall by his side, regal and calm. An artist capturing the scene could easily have gotten their subjects mixed. She waited for Zoryu to dismiss Jaijin, but the order never came. "He's alive?" the Fire Lord said once the doors closed. "Yun was alive, and not a single member of your country thought to tell me? Did everyone in the Earth Kingdom decide to ignore this fact together?" He didn't know how right he was, and Kiyoshi was to blame more than any Earth sage. She couldn't bring herself to answer. "Why would he do this?" Zoryu's cry was directed at the sky-bound spirits as much as Kiyoshi. "Why?" "He was attacking the people who wronged him," she whispered. "Lu Beifong, Heidan, the people who told him he was the Avatar." Vengeance sounded so alien a reason coming from her lips, even though she knew exactly the depth and shape it could take. "I was briefed on what happened in the gallery," Zoryu said. "How many are dead?" Kyoshi forced herself to remember how many bodies Atuat pointedly ignored on the floor. "Lu, Chancellor Dairin, two guards, possibly more, depending if they make it through the night." Zoryu slumped in the corner of his throne. The act made him look like a child trying to hide from getting called on in a classroom. The mantle of being the Fire Lord was too heavy for him right now. "The Chancellor didn't deserve this," he muttered. "None of them did." Chaejin reacted to the list of casualties much differently. "This is terrible," he said, rubbing his chin with exaggerated strokes. "A high-ranking official of the Fire Nation killed in the palace? A foreign dignitary under the Fire Lord's hospitality murdered? Not to mention the destruction of our cultural heritage and the humiliation of the entire court in the garden. The disgraces to our country keep mounting. I can't imagine what would happen if the intruder had successfully assassinated the headmistress of the Royal Academy." Kyoshi noticed he didn't count the fallen guards. She'd had enough of trying to play by decorum. "What exactly are you doing here?" she snapped at Chaejin. "Representing the voice of the Fire Sages in response to this heinous assault upon our nation," he replied. "And if I can get a word in for the Sao Wan clan as well, then so be it." Chaejin stepped down from the stairs leading to the throne. He probably shouldn't have been standing on them in the first place. "I'd be lying to my Fire Lord if I claimed to see a way out of this disaster. We've been gravely dishonored as a people. There are calls for retaliation against the Earth Kingdom." The Earth Kingdom? She was going to say the Earth Kingdom wasn't responsible, but couldn't finish the sentence. "The Earth Kingdom didn't send Yun to harm your country." "I know." Kindness oozed from Chaejin's every word. "I spent the last 20 minutes assuring the court our friends across the sea are not to blame. It took some doing, but I've convinced them. He had no need to lie. If everything she heard tonight was true, it benefited Chae-jin to direct the court's anger at the Fire Lord, not at a foreign power. And it should have been Zoryu doing the diplomatic work. Kyoshi looked to the Fire Lord, but Chae-jin's presence had compressed him into a younger sibling, and nothing but. Unable to speak over his elder. The enraged Kyoso were likely angry about Chae-jin taking charge of the situation. Fire Lord, may I speak to your brother alone? She asked. She'd only just arrived, but it was clear she wasn't going to get anything useful from Zoryu right now. His head bobbed in an indiscernible direction. Zoryu, Chae-jin crooned like he was singing his younger brother to sleep. May we be dismissed? A feeble wave. Good enough. Kyoshi slipped through the heavy doors, and Chae-jin joined her outside. I'm sorry you had to see that, Chae-jin said. He looked down the long hallway to confirm it was empty. My little brother's not the best under pressure. Kyoshi examined his face. I still can't get over how much the two of you look alike for not being from the same mother. I've been told I could serve as his political decoy. We still have those here in the Fire Nation, you know. The Fire Army keeps tabs on random villagers who resemble important figures. I don't think any of them have been pulled into service in the last century, though. Zoryu has not impressed me so far, Kyoshi said. Maybe he should be your decoy instead of you his. Chae-jin's brow lifted at the implication. In truth, I fear for him, he said carefully. If he can't bring the perpetrator to justice swiftly, the clans will no longer consider him fit to be Fire Lord. What would happen then? He'd be replaced. Chae-jin paused to gauge her reaction before continuing. I have no idea with whom, mind you. But no Fire Lord in history has ever left the throne and lived very long afterward. Kyoshi nodded slowly. Who's to say that wouldn't be for the best? No one wants loose ends lying around. A single, unopposed, popular ruler would be much better for the Fire Nation. She leaned in and whispered into his ear. I know what I said at the party. But really, the Avatar works with whoever wears the crown. It doesn't have to be a weakling like Zoryu. Chae-jin grinned. It sounds like I can count on your backing should the worst come to pass. It did sound like that. Answer me this, Kyoshi said. Once you're Fire Lord, what will you do about your country's fortunes? His smile faltered. I'm sorry? What will you do? You told me yourself how much trouble the Fire Nation is in. What actions will you take to help your people? Chae-jin shrugged. I'll think of something. I'm sure once a real ruler sits upon the throne, our people's problems will resolve themselves. I see. So you'll be better than your brother, and the natural order of things will be restored on their own. Yes, exactly. He delighted in her understanding. Avatar, I am correcting a mistake. This country is mine by rights, no matter what my father twisted the law into declaring. I will get what is owed to me, and if a little blood must flow, then so be it. The remnants of Chae-jin's grin melted away. His eyes narrowed. Avatar, are you playing me right now? Playing? No, I was forming an opinion. The court intrigue of the Fire Nation might have been too complex for her to navigate perfectly, but judging character was simpler. In Chae-jin, she saw a man who wanted power for its own sake, and was willing to burn his own country to get it. How utterly familiar.
You know what to do with such men, cackled Lauga. It upset her to no end that she could imagine his whispers better than she could hear the voices of her previous lives. She wasn't going to weed out a dignitary of a foreign nation like her former Sifu might have wanted. But she was going to do everything in her power to prevent an entitled, short-sighted man from instigating a civil war for his own benefit. It was her duty as the Avatar. Che Jin sensed her resolve hardening, which side she was coming down on. Nothing I've said to you will hold up at court or in court. Report me, and it would be your word against mine. You're the Avatar, but you're an outsider. I know. I'll get more on you eventually. He frowned at her directness. Mark my words. The attack upon the palace will lead to Zodiu's downfall if it goes unanswered. Support my brother if you must. It will only delay the inevitable. Not even the Avatar can fight history. Kyoshi turned and walked down the hall. We have a saying in the Fire Nation, Che Jin called after her. Dishonor is like a bird in flight. It has to land somewhere. It was as she expected then. Peace in the Fire Nation, protecting Hadon. All of it pivoted around a single axis. Yun. The Ritual. Kiyoshi drifted on her great raft of a bed in the red ocean of the Avatar's quarters. She couldn't tell how many times she'd been woken up throughout the night by her dreams. Each time her eyes opened, she would stare up at the painted ceiling, her mind racing until her vision blurred into the patterns of swirling crimson. She was wide awake and already dressed when a servant came to rouse her. Nor was she surprised to hear that Rangi and Hadon were also up and waiting to speak with her. The servant guided her to a balcony on an upper floor, set with a small table for breakfast. The sunrise view was marred by the gray wall that ringed the palace, but they were high up enough to see light peeking over the edges of the caldera. The Fire Nation capital residing in a dormant volcano was common knowledge, but Kiyoshi had never considered what the view would be like from inside the sunken depression. She could have been sitting on the palm of a giant, its stone fingers threatening to close around her. Rangi and Hadon were already wolfing down their breakfast of bland gruel and salted vegetables. The blazing spices and oils that had slathered the party food now lay to the side of the table in small pots to be added to taste. Even Fire Nationals took a break from hot flavors first thing in the morning. Kiyoshi was always amused by how swiftly Rangi plowed through her meals, her delicate features at odds with her voracious consumption. Her mother was no different. They'd probably developed a habit in the barracks of eating as fast as possible to avoid wasting time. Sit and eat first, Hadon said to Kiyoshi, pointing at the food with her chopsticks. We're going to need our energy, and I hear you're in the habit of skipping meals. Rangi watched Kyoshi's every bite, a fresh humiliation brought on by Jinpa's tattling. The Avatar was no longer trusted to feed herself properly. I am going to get you back for this, monk, Kiyoshi thought as she chewed and swallowed under Rangi's scrutiny. Somehow, someday. Once they finished, Hadon leaned back in her chair and let silence fall over the table. She watched the light extend its reach across the grounds. So, she said, Yun wants to kill me. The sound of Rangi's knuckles tightening could be heard in the morning stillness, but Hadon stated it dryly, like she was noting the color of their napkins, a detail in an official report. He escaped not only the palace, but a full lockdown of the caldera, she went on. All ports in the capital have been closed. The festivities in Harbor City are on hold while the search continues house to house. No luck yet, though. Kiyoshi was both impressed and disturbed
by how efficiently the Fire Nation could conduct a manhunt. Maybe there's another angle that could help us find him. She told them her conclusion that had germinated in the gallery and taken full root overnight. She'd discussed the possibility with Rangi, but Hadon was hearing it for the first time. You think the spirit that identified you as the Avatar has possessed Yun? Hadon said. Kiyoshi nodded. Genju called it Father Glowworm. He said it fought with Kuruk in the past. This spirit could be controlling him, or maybe it altered his mind. She noticed Rangi frown deeply, but put it aside for now. I've never heard the name, Hadon said. During the time our group spent together, spiritual excursions were never Kuruk's focus, to say the least. Kyoshi sorely wished people would stop dancing around Kuruk's tenure as the Avatar with euphemisms. She didn't see what her predecessor had done to earn the favor. Back in Yokoya, I pulled apart Janju's libraries, searching for mentions of a spirit fitting the description, but found nothing. I was hoping you would have some recollection. Better to ask Kuruk himself. Kyoshi thought Hadon was brushing her off, until she remembered she was supposed to be able to commune with her past lives. The statement was meant literally. It would have been foolish to hide her spiritual troubles any further, so she gritted her teeth and confessed. I can't, she said. I can't fully reach Kuruk or any other avatar. To her surprise, they weren't upset. Communing with their past lives is one of the most difficult and complex feats an avatar can perform, Hadon said. Successful methods and experiences have been known to vary between generations. I wouldn't advertise your problem, but I wouldn't beat yourself up about it either. Kiyoshi was relieved down to the bone. In one matter regarding her broken, rocky avatarhood, at least one matter, she wasn't at fault. What a difference it made having someone older and wiser to give her advice. Hadon stared over the edge of the balcony and drummed her fingers against the table. I have an idea, she said. I know a friend of Kuruk's who spent more time with him after our original group went its separate ways. He used to be a fire sage stationed in the capital, but these days he maintains a small shrine in North Chungling. He's an expert in spiritual matters. If anyone could give us answers, it's him. North Chungling? The town name held some meaning that Rangi disapproved of. We couldn't go to the real fire sages? They're in the pocket of the Sawon clan, Hadon said. The high sage is Chejin's maternal great-uncle. But my contact might know more about this Father Glowworm creature, especially if it has a link to Kuruk. If the Avatar successfully fought it in the past, perhaps it can be defeated again now. The idea of her predecessor being useful to Kiyoshi was a new one, but it filled her with hope. Kuruk's friend could teach her how to break the spell Yun was under. She could save him. This was her edge, the one she'd been missing in the Earth Kingdom. We have to go to North Chungling, she said. Rangi slammed her fists on the table, clattering the empty dishes. The frustration building inside her since the beginning of the discussion had finally boiled over. Are the two of you listening to yourselves? She shouted. The palace was attacked, and you want to go on a wild spirit chase? Kiyoshi's optimism was too fragile to withstand any debate. She needed Rangi completely behind her, not throwing up resistance. How else are we going to get the old Yun back? She snapped. Kiyoshi, he killed 4 people and defiled the palace. After what he did, there is no more old Yun. She couldn't believe this. I'm telling you, he is possessed. Rongi's chair screeched as she rose to her feet. And a day ago, you weren't even sure of that. Lieutenant, Hadon said, control yourself. No, Mother, I won't. Her choice of words was a retort to Hadon's use of rank.
I'm not going to sit here calmly and listen to you entertain Kyoshi's wild guesses about spirits instead of coming up with a defensive plan for your own safety. I know you both feel terrible for what happened to Yun. I do too. But after what we all saw, it would be utterly foolish to treat him like anything but the danger he is.
There was only a limited amount of room on the balcony for Rangi to pace back and forth, but she made do.
I mean, he shouldn't have been capable of half the things he did last night. He infiltrated the capital, murdered Lu, and single-handedly foiled the entire security force of the royal palace. It doesn't make sense. Yun is a diplomat and a talented earthbender, not some kind of trained killer.
He is, Hadon said. He is a trained killer.
Rangi was caught in the middle of launching the next volley of her tirade, her finger crooked to the sky.
What?
As methodically as if she were donning armor before a battle, Hadon readied herself. She took several deep, controlled breaths. And then she told Kyoshi and Rangi a story about Yun they had never heard before. Immediately after finding Yun and Makapu, Janju started to fret. Daofei and corrupt politicians alike had profited greatly from the absence of the Avatar. Kuruk's early death showed how disastrous it could be for the world if the cycle were renewed at the wrong time. Yun needed to be able to defend himself from attempts on his life. His physical safety wasn't Genju's only concern. The new Avatar's legitimacy would be attacked with every underhanded trick in the book. Yun and his allies would inevitably suffer from slander, extortion, theft of secrets. He would have to maintain constant vigilance against attempts to destabilize his era of Avatarhood. Yun's enemies would come after him as spies, sowers of chaos, and assassins. And in Genju's eyes, there was no better protection than to make sure Yun possessed those same skills himself. That had been Master Amok's role in Yokoya, Hadon explained. The mysterious waterbender had perfected his craft in the dark corridors of Ba Sing Se, where smiling princes attended feasts together by day and waged hidden wars of secrets and daggers against each other by night. Master Amok had not only trained Yun to resist poison, but also taught him how to use it. Atuat's brother had instructed him how to eliminate enemies with knife and bare hand. The lessons had been limited to theory, but like in every subject save firebending, Yun had shown to be a talented student. Kyoshi tried to reconcile what she was hearing with the boy she knew. Yun had abhorred Genju's butchering of the Yellownecks, but he'd also mentioned how much he enjoyed learning from Master Amok. Genju must have been slowly working on moving Yun from the abstract to the practical. He wanted another gravedigger and was willing to be patient to get it.
I turned a blind eye because I thought it would be best for the Avatar's protection in the long run, Hadon said. I am so sorry for what I allowed him to do to Yun, she'd told Kyoshi. She hadn't been referring to bending training. Rangi was quiet, and she was cold. No heat emanated from her body. Her face was like ice covering a river, frozen to a thickness that masked what flowed underneath. She despised assassins. When pushed to the brink, Rangi had allowed the Avatar to work with outlaws, but there was no world where she compromised her morals and her honor like her mother had.
A spirit didn't turn Yun into a monster, she whispered to Hadon. You did.
I'm sorry.
Rangi grabbed the table by its corners. She rose to her feet, her back muscles flexing as she lifted the heavy piece of furniture, dishes and cups sliding over the lacquered surface, and hurled the entire setting over the edge of the balcony. The morning air was heavy before the crash. By the time the table hit the ground below, and the sounds of wood groaning and porcelain splashing like raindrops reached them. Rongi was already leaving. Hadon made no move to stop her daughter. She sat across from Kiyoshi, as if this were a normal occurrence, a standard outburst. With nothing between their chairs to occupy the space, Kiyoshi felt overexposed.
"Is anyone hurt?" Hadon asked calmly.
Kiyoshi glanced over the railing and shook her head. Hadon pointed her chin at the door Rongi had vanished through.
"You should go talk to her. You might be the only person who can right now."
"I need you to confirm something first."
Hadon read the tightness in the Avatar's frown. "Kelsong didn't know. We took great pains to conceal such matters from him. He would have confronted the rest of us earlier had he found out."
Kiyoshi was grateful to hear it, but in no mood to forgive.
"And then maybe the rest of you would have killed him sooner, too."
She didn't bother looking for a reaction in the older woman's eyes to see if she'd successfully wounded the last living member of Avatar Kuruk's companions. She got up to go look for Rongi. Kiyoshi ran into Jinpa first. He already knew a delicate situation was afoot.
"Mistress Rongi is in the stables," he said. "I was grooming Yingyang when she came in and offered to assist. She seemed like she needed solitude, so I let her take over."
"She told you to get lost, didn't she?"
Jinpa shrugged. "I negative jinged it out of there before my robes started smoking. Just make sure she doesn't yank my bison's fur out by brushing too hard."
Kiyoshi followed his directions down the halls of the palace until she came to another garden-facing exit. It revealed a freestanding longhouse that smelled of fresh-cut hay. A gaggle of stable hands idled at a distance from the building, looking confused about what to do with their hands. Kiyoshi knew they'd been ordered away. Where they stood marked the edge of Rongi's blast radius. She went to the largest pen and saw Yingyang, his fluffy bulk taking up most of the room inside. His saddle hung off his back at an angle, and only one side of his fur lay smooth and flat. He grunted at Kiyoshi as if to ask,
"Is someone going to finish the job?"
The sound of sniffling gave away Rongi's location. She found her by Yingyang's second and third right legs, sitting on the hay-strewn floor, tucked into a ball. Kyoshi's instincts were to lean down and wrap the smaller girl in her arms.
"Why didn't you stop him?"
The kind of sharpness in Rongi's tone was rarely ever aimed at Kiyoshi, but now it was out in full force.
"Who? Genju?"
"Yun."
Rongi looked up, her eyes red.
"I saw how close you got to him at the party, and you did nothing."
Kiyoshi knew she was only lashing out from anger, but it still wasn't a fair hit.
"Nothing? He was standing in the middle of a crowd of hostages." "So you waved your fans at him. Good try. You're the Avatar, Kiyoshi. Did it ever occur to you to try bending? You had so many chances to drop him by force, and you didn't take them."
"I..."
She had no response for why she didn't try fighting Yun with water or air. Hurting him with the elements, like she'd reflexively done to so many Daofei and hatchet men, hadn't occurred to her. Looking back on it, even her strokes with her fans had been slow and hesitant. The shame inside Kiyoshi twisted into something hurtful.
"What should I have done then? Kill him in cold blood like I did Xu Ping'an? Put him down like a rabid animal? He's our friend."
"Well, I'm glad you still have room to debate," Rongi shouted. "I no longer get to decide how I feel about Yun. He took that choice away from me. What if he hurts you, Kiyoshi? What if he attacks us again and you hesitate and he hurts you?"
Kiyoshi punched the wall over Rongi's head.
"He wouldn't."
Dust trickled from the ceiling, catching the rays of the sun peeking into the stable. From where she sat, Rongi's voice turned smaller and younger.
You have a hole in your robes that says otherwise. If I had convinced you not to wear your armor, we'd be in a very different place right now. You'd be seriously injured, or worse, and it would have been my fault.
She lowered her eyes and curled her knees closer.
I couldn't live with that, any more than I could live with losing my mother again. I just got the two of you back.
Kyoshi slumped to the ground beside her. Rongi, I swear to you, I will do what it takes with Yun. I won't let him harm anyone else, especially not your mother.
Rongi examined every inch of Kyoshi's face, looking for sincerity. She wiped the growing wetness from her own eyes before it became tears.
When she opened her eyes in Atuat's hospital, I started to hope the past was done with us, Rongi said. I thought we could begin moving forward, like how the traditional Avatar calendar counts the days. Did you know it's technically the 6,454th day of the era of Kyoshi?
Counting the days by where they fell in an Avatar's life was a formal and archaic method of timekeeping. It was mostly used by historians or trotted out during certain spiritual ceremonies.
It doesn't feel like it, Kyoshi muttered.
It didn't seem like her avatarhood had ever legitimately begun. They sat there for a long time, saying nothing, wishing things were different. Kyoshi broke the silence.
You threw a table off the balcony.
Rongi laughed, a strangled noise of release.
I am in so much trouble. I could have killed someone. In the royal palace, no less. What if the Fire Lord had been walking underneath us?
I no longer hold the title for worst breach of manners in the Four Nations, Kyoshi said. And I am never, ever going to let you forget it.
Rongi reached over and took her hand. Red scars traveled down Kyoshi's wrist in wavy branching patterns, like the veins of a palm frond, a token from when she'd fought the lightning.
For as long as you live?
Rongi asked solemnly.
Kyoshi smiled and nodded.
For as long as I live.
Rongi pressed her lips to the healed skin on Kyoshi's knuckles. The kiss sealed a promise to always give each other a hard time for the rest of their days. If Kyoshi held any longing for the past, it was for those simpler moments when she was Rongi's greatest and only headache.
Avatar, Lieutenant, are you in there?
Zoryu called from outside.
I request your presence regarding a certain matter.
Rongi's head shot up from Kyoshi's shoulder. They looked at each other with growing panic. Maybe it had been a historically important table. They sidled past Ying Yong out of the pen. The attendants had been dismissed. The Fire Lord waited for them, wearing a lighter morning dress version of his robes. Kyoshi wondered if it took as long for him to put on his clothes as it did for her to don her chainmail.
I didn't acquit myself well last night, immediately after the incident, Zoryu said to her.
He fought the urge to look at the curling, pointed toes of his shoes instead of maintaining eye contact.
I should have taken command of the situation. I should have been the one talking to you instead of Chae-jin. I swear, when it comes to my brother, I feel like my wits leave me. Certain people, they turn you into who you were before.
Zoryu had his flaws, but he was a ruler who cared about his nation. With Kyoshi's help, he could grow into his crown.
You don't need to apologize, she said. Good, because apparently strong fire lords aren't allowed to, he sighed. I've been speaking with my advisors, and the situation remains dire. The only chance I have of keeping the court from turning on me is apprehending Yun.
Then we want the same thing, Kiyoshi said. I will find him for the both of us.
Thank you, Avatar. He bit his lip. That's not the only reason I'm here, though.
He stepped aside to reveal Heidan standing behind him, with Atuat by her side. The two women were stiff-backed, as if ceremony had suddenly intruded its ugly head again.
What's the meaning of this? Rongi said.
She recognized something she didn't like in her mother's posture.
Atuat is my second, and the Fire Lord is my witness, Heidan said.
Without her cane, she slowly, carefully sank to her knees on the grass. She reached behind her and unsheathed a wickedly sharp knife.
No, Rongi started forward. Mother, no!
Heidan pinned her daughter in place with a glare.
After what I've done, you would protest? Consistency, Lieutenant. No one gets to escape the consequences of their deeds. This was a long time in coming.
She grasped her topknot with one hand and placed the edge of the knife on it carefully.
For failing to recognize the true Avatar, she said, holding Kiyoshi's gaze. For not protecting my friend Kelsong.
Heidan looked to the Fire Lord.
For letting my former pupil dishonor our nation.
And finally, Rongi.
For not being worthy of my daughter's esteem.
With one swift stroke, Heidan lopped off the bundle of hair and tossed it on the ground before her. Her dark silken locks, salted with gray strands, billowed down her face and neck. Rongi shuddered as Atuat carefully picked up the severed topknot and folded a clean silk kerchief around it. She'd lost her own hair once, but that was due to the underhanded tactics of an enemy, far away in the Earth Kingdom. Regrettable and traumatic, but more akin to a war injury. Heidan had acknowledged her personal dishonor right in the beating heart of their own country in front of the Fire Lord.
It's done, she said to Rongi with a sad smile. You hold this family's honor in your hands now. You'll take far better care of it than I have.
With a few more flicks of the knife, Heidan cropped the remainder of her hair to match the severed ends, making it shockingly short, yet somehow still neatly fetching around her beautiful face. For this family, doing things cleanly and properly applied to everything, including rituals of ultimate humility. Atuat took the knife from Heidan and helped her up. In a way, the doctor made the ideal second. She would do as her friend requested without the hesitance a noble of the Fire Nation might have at seeing one of its most illustrious figures fall from grace. Rongi, on the other hand, was apoplectic. She'd been robbed of her righteous momentum, had her pockets picked. There was nothing she could say anymore to her mother in anger. Heidan let her daughter flap and fume another minute before deciding they'd wasted enough time. Letting witnesses have their say, even family members, did not appear to be part of the top-knot-severing ritual.
All right, then. North Chungling.
She peered inside the stable at Yingyong.
I see you haven't saddled the bison correctly. 5 people will cause the floor to shift.
What do you mean, 5 people? Rongi managed to spit out. What do you mean, North Chungling? We didn't agree to go there.
You were upset we weren't discussing a plan for my safety earlier, Heidan said. Well, standard operating procedure after a target comes under attack is to move their location. You should know this well. It's how you protected the Avatar from Genju.
Heidan turned to everyone.
We are going to hide out in North Chungling, she declared. While we're there, Kiyoshi can make contact with Kuruk's friend to follow up on any spiritual leads to find Yun. It'll kill two spider snakes with one stone. Brother Jinpa, have you finished gathering the supplies?
Jinpa teetered around the corner, crates and burlap bags stacked high in his arms.
I have, headmistress. We can be in the air in 15 minutes.
Heidan had commandeered Kiyoshi's secretary the same way Rongi had. Rongi stared at Jinpa, furious at his betrayal. He simply shrugged, as if to say, scariest firebender wins, before sidling into the pen next to his bison.
We haven't discussed our options, Rongi said. We have to take into account your condition.
She'll be fine,
Atuat said with an uncomfortably cavalier wave of her hand.
Fresh air and movement will be better for her health than cooping her up in the palace. She survived the trip home, didn't she?
But...
Rongi looked to Kiyoshi for backup. It seemed like she wanted to avoid a flight with her mother at all costs.
But nothing, Heidan said before the Avatar could weigh in. I may have no rank now, young lady, but you are still my daughter. I am telling you that we are going on this trip, and I don't want to hear any further complaints spewing out of your mouth. Now hush.
Young lady? Kiyoshi had seen the headmistress give the lieutenant orders before, but this was some kind of new and frightening relationship that had been unshackled. Rongi's mouth bent into a shape Kiyoshi didn't know it could achieve.
I'm officially an Avatar's companion,
Atuat whooped, throwing her fists in the air. The sudden noise startled Ying Yong into squashing Jinpa against the side of the pen.
I'm going to get one of those fancy ink paintings of us, commissioned for posterity.
Heidan was already inspecting the sections of Ying Yong's coat Rongi had worked on.
You call this grooming? She said, aiming her disapproval at her daughter. It looks like you used a body brush instead of a dandy brush. It'll have to be redone, all of it.
Somebody help me?
Jinpa pleaded from the other side, his voice muffled by his own bison's fur. Zoryu watched the proceedings, gripped by horror and dismay.
I was going to give a great big speech about how the fate of my nation rests on the shoulders of this group, he said to Kiyoshi.
A bag tore open, scattering grain everywhere. Ying Yong roared in delight and began lapping it up, nearly knocking Atuat down with his tongue.
We'll be careful, Kiyoshi said.
Rongi and the others had to go back to the palace for a few more things. Heidan cornered Kiyoshi while she was straightening Ying Yong's saddle blanket. The two of them were alone in the pen.
It's not enough, and you know it, the older woman said quietly.
Kiyoshi kept her eyes on her work.
What isn't?
My hair, my honor. They're not enough to balance the scale.
Heidan busied her hands along the saddle so it would look like they were talking about something else, something trivial.
There is no escaping the past. Yun is the sins of my generation come back to haunt us. One way or another, he will catch up to me.
She cinched one of the buckles tighter.
Rongi may view this trip as traveling for my protection. You see it as a search for clues. But from my perspective, we're luring Yun away from the palace, out in the open. I am coming with you to act as bait.
Kiyoshi started to protest, but Heidan would brook no argument.
You will use me to draw Yun in. You will let him kill me if you have to. I don't think you have a good chance of capturing him without a sacrifice.
Rongi would never allow.
Which is why I am talking to you right now, and not her. The stability of the Fire Nation is more important than my life.
She gestured at her shortened hair.
The other reason I cut my top knot is so that there will be no further disgrace to the country if he kills me.
An honorless person does not need to be avenged. I can bear any insult because there's no more person to insult.
Hadon was as even and steady as the earth they stood on.
As far as I'm concerned, I don't deserve to escape Yun's wrath any more than Genju deserved to escape yours. My death might actually close the books on this nightmare. An upside I'd accept without hesitation.
The fake work reached its limits, and they turned to face each other.
My daughter would never listen to me on such matters, Hadon said. But I can trust you to do what needs to be done. Right, Kiyoshi?
Caught between two family members, Kiyoshi didn't know what to say. For the sake of Rangi, she should have refused Hadon immediately. But the headmistress's chilling logic was brutal and elegant at the same time. It boggled Kiyoshi how easily Hadon came up with the trade. Hadon took her silence for an answer and patted her on the shoulder.
Good girl.
The Fire Sage. Traveling over the Earth Kingdom meant crossing vast mountain ranges, lakes the size of oceans, deserts that threatened to swallow their surrounding features. Kyoshi was used to idling large swaths of time away on a bison's back, watching the landscape grow and shrink as she flew from one city to another. Traveling through the Fire Nation was a quick jaunt in comparison. Reaching their destination on Shuhon Island, the next landmass over from the capital, felt like flipping a piece of double-sided embroidery around to see what was on the back. North Chungling lay nestled inside enveloping arms of volcanic rock, a small gap in the formation granting it access to the sea. They found an outcropping on the forested slope where Ying Yang could stay, rather than be forced into pens that weren't built to fit him. Despite the short journey, Rongi spilled out of the saddle, a ragged mess.
Your landing zone selection needs work, Hadon said, pursuing her mercilessly.
It doesn't need work, Rongi muttered.
Young lady, I have been traveling with the Avatar on bison back since before you were born. I count two approaches from the downwind side and insufficient forage. Do you want poor Ying Yang to get surprised by rustlers? Or starve to death?
We're not going to be here that long.
You don't know that. Does preparedness not carry the day anymore? Do we need to take down the door sign at the academy?
It had been like this the whole flight. Kiyoshi took Rongi by the hand before she burst into flames. Why don't we, scout ahead? She dragged her away from the group, down the trail leading to the settlement. Jinpa and Atuat stayed behind, walking at Hadon's pace. They'd been mostly quiet throughout the trip, not daring to get between any family arguments.
Traveling with my mother is the worst, Rongi fumed once they had some distance. It's like being 12 all over again.
How did you manage going to the North Pole together?
She was comatose, Rongi said, startling Kiyoshi with her flippancy. Having her constantly in my ear, on a mission with the Avatar, no less, is a completely different story.
It wasn't the reaction Rongi was looking for, but Kiyoshi swelled with a sudden happiness. She couldn't help it. Rongi acting so completely, utterly normal, tugged on a rope connected directly to her heart. It always would. On a whim, she picked Rongi up by the waist and whirled her around. No one was there to scold them for inappropriate touching. Rongi laughed despite herself and tried to swat at her, but couldn't reach as far.
Stop it! You're embarrassing me!
That's the point. Most Earth Kingdom cities of good repair and repute were square, created to be plain and rigidly four-sided in the unimaginative but sufficient Earth Kingdom way. When settlements were forced into circular plots of land, though,
Kiyoshi was accustomed to seeing towns arranging themselves in rings, mimicking Ba Sing Se. The layout deliberately made it easy to see who was rich and who wasn't. But inside their caldera, the residents of North Chungling had opted to build in wedges. Houses and market stalls angled their way toward the center, separated by streets that resembled the spokes of a wheel. Without earthbenders to raise walls and roofs, the buildings had been hewn from logs dragged down from the slopes of the mountain. The relentless humidity warped much of the wood construction,